We're holding on line of chess summit bays, about 10 lines from the top. Line begins Elmer of line begins Shudoyin, actually, El Armor of Nachman, the end of the line. We were discussing yesterday, the Gemara had started discussing the question. The Mishnah said that an onus has to pay tsar, as among the five, they have to pay the knas, the 50 shkodim. You also have to pay boshes and nezek. That both an onus and a mafata have to pay. We said an onus additionally has to pay tsar. A mafata does not. So we were discussing what kind of tsar are we talking about. What? Pagam is nezek. Pagam is another word for nezek. So we were discussing what exactly is the tsar that an anusa has that we said it has to be something that an anusa has and a mafuta doesn't. But in addition, it has to be something, as the Braise had said, because Reb Shimon ben Yehuda argues and says that an onus doesn't have to pay a tsar because she's anyway going to have the same tsar later when she gets married, and they argue with him that it's a different onus of Rodotin. So we have to figure what kind of tsar is there that an anusa has and a mafuta doesn't, but even an anusa would normally expect to experience the same kind of tsar with her husband. So we went through a couple of possibilities, and we wound up, we discussed the idea that maybe it means the tsar shall pisik her raglayim, the tsar of having to open her feet for relations. And the question was, well, is it the same by onus and mafata? And the answer is the mafata was willingly. She was consensual, so therefore it's the equivalent of telling somebody else, you know, you can rip my clothes, you'll be puffed. But we left off with the question, what do you mean my clothes? Any of these things that we're talking about go to her father. We learned before the knas goes to her father. The boshes and the tsar and the nezek do also. As we'll discuss later why indeed those things should go to the father if they happen to her. So what are we talking about over here? The Ella Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Barbua, Pitches Shebehena Omeris, the smart women say, Mefuta ain't la tsar. That a Mefuta does not, when it was consensual, does not have tsar. Question is, well, Kachazin in the Isla, but we see she does have tsar. Now, Mefarshim discussed over here, what kind of tsar are we talking about? For sure, we said, forget about the idea that the tsar is Chavata Agabikarka, that she was knocked down on the ground, because we said that she wouldn't normally experience with her husband either. But are we talking about pisuk haraglayim still, or are we back to the idea that maybe it's the pain of losing her psulim, which is a painful thing also. Although Tosfos pointed out on Amud Aleph, the problem with that understanding, which is why the Gemara didn't even consider it in the first place, is because you can distinguish between the tsar of between the actual losing of the psulim, where the twinge of pain there, but then you have the taiva of bia, which then kind of overrides that, versus the tsar that you feel afterwards, the pain that she feels for a few days afterwards. That's grum of a nizikin, though. You can't make the guy chayev for that. That's more of an indirect thing. So the mafarshim discussed that in order to be chayev for damages, it has to be more of a direct thing. There is, by the way, we may get to it later in the Masechta. We'll for sure get to it when we get to the Babas. There's a big difference between Groma ben Ezekin and Dina de Garmi. There's a big Groma and Garmi. There's a big difference between one kind of indirect nezek where you are chayav for, points of a mayor anyway, which is the halacha, and another kind which you're not. We'll have to get into that. Ramban wrote an entire kuntras discussing the difference between Groma and Garmi. Yeah. But for our purposes, let's not get into that. Some of Farshim anyway discussed when we say over here that the mafuta doesn't feel tsar, are we talking about the tsar of pisuk raglayim, or are we back to the tsar of the psulim? So the question is, So v'akachazin in the isla, but we see that a mafuta does feel tsar. Amar Abaya, Amar Li'eim, my mother told me, and we've learned before that this doesn't really mean his mother. His mother died in childbirth. It means his stepmother, his foster mother. The pain of the pain of that first time is kamaya chamimi al resha de karcha. It's like hot water on a bald head. Meaning there is a certain bit of pain there. A person who's bald takes a hot shower, you feel a little bit of pain, the hot water landing on the bare skin. But on the other hand, it's sort of a good pain. Or like maybe it's not enough of a pain to even be payable for, maybe less than a shava prutza even. Rav Amar, so therefore, by mafuta, there's none of that. By an anusa, it's more than that, and therefore he's chayav for the pain.
You mean by mafuta, the pain just goes away quickly, or?
Well, the idea is we're saying that it's either we're saying it's kind of pleasurable, it's pleasure mixed with pain, but therefore you can't, it's not really actionable, or that maybe there is pain, maybe, but it's less than a shava prutza, as opposed to an anusa, it's a serious thing. Yeah.
Question, what would you say about pain?
That's what we're saying. We're arguing on the, even if it was willingly, the fact is the guy still is high of the knas. He's still high of the boishes, the embarrassment, which, by the way, we're going to talk about later, that the, at the end of the parak, that the embarrassment is not just to her personally. If that's the case, maybe she could be meichel on it. The embarrassment is also to her family. And there's the nezek, the fact that now she's, so to speak, worthless on the slave market, which we'll talk about later on, Memo and Bays, how that works out. That's the argument we're saying over here. With a mefuta, since she agrees to it, then the pain is not something you make him pay for. Aye, there is pain, but the pain is like too little to is like too little, and it's mixed with pleasure for us to worry about, as opposed to by an anusa, obviously there is. So that's one example. Rava Amar, Amrali Bas Rav Chista. So Rava gives another illustration that this daughter of Rav Chista, who was Rava's wife, told me that the first time is Kirivda de Kusilta. It's like the pain you feel when you get from the needle prick when you have bloodletting done. Same idea. It's like a little twinge of pain. And a third one, or Papa Amar, Amrali Bas Abba Surah, the daughter of Abba Surah, who was his wife, told me. Kinama akusha b'chinchi. It's like hard bread against your palate. Again, you know, you're eating a piece of toast or something. It scrapes the roof of your mouth a little bit. But on the other hand, you're having the enjoyment of eating. So it's the same idea with all of them, that there's a pain, but there's also a pleasure involved.
So there is a qualification for
this type of thing. That's the three examples that we have here. Okay, then the Mishnah continued. Ha'onus notes in miyad that one of the differences we said between an onus and a mafata, the onus has to pay the knas right away. Whereas the mafata only has to pay it when he as lachshayotzi on the face of it means when he divorces her. So the question is, what do you mean lachshayotzi? What do you mean when he divorces her? Ishtohi, is she his wife to begin with? What do you mean? The mafata doesn't necessarily have to marry her. It makes it sound like he has to marry her, and then if he divorces her, then he pays. Sabai says, you're right. Well, the mission doesn't mean if he divorces her. It means if he ends up not marrying her, that's when he pays the knas. As opposed to, as we're going to talk about soon, if he does marry her, then the ksuba, then the knas effectively becomes her ksuba. As we're going to learn now, that any of the three of them can object to the marriage in the case of a mafata, right?
And therefore,
there's more of a chance that the mafata may not marry her. And if that happens, then he pays the knas. So when we say l'chshayotzi in the Mishnah, it doesn't mean if he marries her and then divorces her. It means if he never marries her to begin with. The Rashba quotes that the Ravid has a bit of a different understanding of this line over here. L'chshayotzi, ishtohi, it's a statement of fact. She is his wife. If he divorces her, the Ravid learned, now we're going to talk about soon how much her ksuba is, and the Gemara doesn't really talk about it in so many words, so it's machlokas actually between the Rambam and the Ravid. How much is this girl's ksuba? If this mafata does decide to marry her, on the one hand, she's not a basula now, by definition. He had relations with her. On the other hand, you don't want to say choyte nisko. You don't want to say that he gained from having done something wrong. The Rambam holds that for that therefore her ksuba is 200 zuz, and the 50 that he's supposed to give her as a knas literally becomes the ksuba of a basula. Whereas the Ravid holds no, that she only gets a ksuba of 100. So the Ravid understands the line over here, l'chshayotzi ishtahi, that the Gemara is asking, what do you mean l'chshayotzi, that when he divorces her, he gives her 200 zuz? Ishtahi, she's his wife, if he marries her, and then he only has to give her 100 zuz.
In terms of knas, in other words,
yeah, his wife. Yeah, well, in terms of the actual marriage. But where the question would be, so this question would be, what do you mean he gives her 200 when he divorces her, if, according to the Ravid, he only has to give her 100 when he divorces her? And the answer is, we don't mean when he divorces her, we mean if he never marries her. We learn similarly in a braisa. Even though a mafata pays if he doesn't marry the girl, and here we see clearly that it means if he doesn't marry her, not if he marries her and divorces her. Nevertheless, boishes pagam noisin miyad. When it comes to boishes and pagam, meaning nezek, those he pays right away. The echad and continues the braisa. The echad onus veechad mafata. Whether it's an onus or mafata, ben hi or ben avia yichoyin la'akiv. Either she or her father are able to object. And the marriage doesn't take place.
The marriage doesn't take place.
Meaning,
because of their objection.
Yeah, in other words, the guy was onus or mafata this girl. If it's an onus, we said in the Mishnah, he has no choice. He is not given a choice in the matter. He has to marry her. But we're saying she or her father can object and say, I don't want to marry her. I don't want to marry off my daughter to him. And then they don't get married. And similarly by mafata. I can understand then why that would be by mafuta, because if you moan, the pasuk says if her father refuses, then he pays the knas, And we learn Ein li ela avia, that's from the pasuk we would only see if her father objects. He asks Maminayin, how do you see that she herself is able to object and not have to get married to him? Tamad leimah yimayin mekol makom. That's why you have the double expression ma'in yimayin. That's not only her father, but any kind of miyun, her miyun also.
She would eat that father.
Her father still has rights over her as a naira, so that the marriage wouldn't happen. Tosfos actually asks the other way around. How is it if her father has a girl's father, we're going to learn later on Memo Medbez, has the right to marry her off to anybody he wants. So how is it that we're saying over here, if the father wants to marry her off and she doesn't, that the marriage wouldn't take place? If it wasn't a matter of Pithuri, then he would have rights. Why does Pithuri change anything? And the Tosfos answers, in fact, that yes, she can't prevent the marriage from happening, but if she objects, then the guy still has to pay the knas. What we say is, if she and her father are both willing for her to marry the guy, then there's no knas. He marries her. Pesef Yishko Kamar Absula. No, Pesef Yishko is if he doesn't want to marry. Mohav Yimaren Loyla Yishu. He takes her as a wife and writes to Ksuba. And the Ksuba is, as we just mentioned, Machloikas Rishonim, whether it's 200 or 100 Zuz. But if she objects, if she says, I don't want to marry him, she still may have to get married because her father is able to be Makadisher, but the guy will have to pay the knas. That's the difference, Tosfos says. Yeah.
Either way, what's the divorce she's going to have? Who's that going to?
If she's a Kana or a Naira, then it goes to her father.
Regardless of whether he marries her or not?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I'm by the chair.
Okay, Ella Onus, but let's see, when it comes to the Onus, Bishleim Ihi, I can understand why it is she herself can refuse to marry him. The Pasuk says, Ksiv, Veloitia, which implies Midaita. She should become his wife, which implies, Veloitia, she should become, which implies only if she's willing to become. Ella Avia Manolon, where do we see by an Onus that her father has the right to refuse? Abaya says, very simple, you don't want that because an Aveda was done, that he should be gaining. Normally, this girl is Ktana or Naira, or Naira according to the Chum, Ktana according to, Naira or Ktana according to the mayor. The father would have the right to marry her off. He would have the right to say yes or no to anybody who wants to be Mekadisher. You're not going to say, because this fellow off the street was Ma'anasir, that therefore that allows him to undo her father's rights. You can't do that. Rava says a different reason. We can make a kavachomer. Think of it. A mafata only went against what her father wants. She herself was willing. She herself consented to it. And we're saying that either she or her father can object, and the marriage won't happen. So the onus not only went against what her father wants, he went against what she wanted because he raped her. How much more so that you can't say that he should be able to marry her without her father's rishus. So the Gemara points out, Rava loy amar k'Abaya, why does each of them need a different explanation? Rava doesn't say like Abaya because he figures keeping to the Kamar Shalom knas lav choyte niskehu. You're saying the guy has to pay the knas. So what do you mean choyte niskehu? The definite choyte niskehu, you're saying you don't want the guy to get away with it. He's not getting away with it. He's having to pay 50 shkolim, which is a substantial sum of money. So there's no choyte, even if you were to say that, he has to pay, but on the other hand, he gets to marry her against her father's wishes, that still would be called choyte niskehu. So therefore, Rava says we have to have a different reason. Abaya lo amar k'Rava, whereas Abaya disagrees with Rava, because he figures, mefata di'u matim akiv, over your nami matim akiv. He figures like this. A mefata, where we find that the mefata himself, the one who did the pituri, is allowed to refuse. He's allowed to say, you know what, I don't want to marry her, and just pay the knaf and go away. Therefore, it's logical, over your nami matim akiv. So it's logical, okay, her father has the same right also. Onus, the deal, the matzi ma'akev, when it comes to the onus, where he doesn't have the right to say no, the pasuk says that he has to marry her. You know, as we learned in the Mishnah, shoy sabastitza, he drinks out of his, and he can never, well, we'll get to that in a minute, actually, but yeah, that he has to marry her. Therefore, it might be logical to think of your nami le matzi ma'akev. You might have thought that maybe her father can't be ma'akev either, that only she has a say in the matter. Therefore, Abaya says, we have the reason shalo yei choyte nisker, tells us that. So the Maisa, according to both of them, the point is either the girl or her father can refuse. Again, according to Tosfos, if the girl refuses, doesn't necessarily mean the marriage doesn't take place, just means the guy still has to pay the knas. But they learn it from different ways. Tanya Ijach, we learn in another Braisa, Afa Pisha Amru Onus Noisin Miyad, even though we say that an onus has to pay the money right away, if he divorces her, then he doesn't owe her anything. What do you mean she yachid mimotzi makakla? Okay, he's not allowed to divorce her. Veloitzi elisha lo yuchal shalcho lo yuchal shalcho kol yomav. The pasuk says. No. Rather, let's change the wording of the braisa. It should be k'shetetze he in la olav klum. If she wants to leave the marriage, meaning if she decides I don't want to be married to him anymore, and she's demanding a get, then she doesn't get anything. She doesn't get a ksuba. And mess, similarly, if her husband dies, one second, we'll talk in a second. Mess, if husband dies, this oinus who married her now dies, yotza kesef knasa b'ksubasa. Then the money that should have been her knas instead goes to her ksuba. Rabbi Yossi b'bihoda, I mean, no, yesh la ksuba mana. Rabbi Yossi b'bihoda says that no, she does get a ksuba of 100. So what's the point of the machlekes? B'mayikom b'fugi. Rabbanan Sabri, the Rabbanan figure like this. Time of my takinu Rabbanan Ksuba. Why b'chlal did the Rabbanan make a takana that a woman has to get a Ksuba? Because you don't want that it should be easy for a man to divorce his wife. You want him to have to think twice before doing it. 100, 200, it's a substantial sum of money. So it'll make him think about it. V'holei, matimatik law, whereas in the case of an oinus, he's not able to divorce her anyway. So the Chachamim figure, why bother with a Ksuba? There's no kala b'ainiv loitzia anyway. Whereas Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda figures, Honami Sarla. Yes, but in the case of an onus, what can happen? We just said Kshetetehi, if she chooses to leave the marriage, what can happen? He might cause her so much trouble, he might harass her so much in the marriage, Ad Amrahi Loiba Inalach, until she says, you know what, I don't want to stay married to you anymore. When the Pasuk says, Loyuchal Shalcho Koyamov, in other words, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is saying, doesn't mean there can never be a divorce. Because what happens if she gets sick and tired of him? You're going to keep her trapped in a marriage like that? It's not her fault. So it means he can't unilaterally decide to divorce her. Remember, minatara, a woman can be divorced against her will. It's only chayim jabenegeshim that she can. But if she is the one demanding the get, then that's different. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that in that case, you still want shalai take halab ein of loisia. You still want to make him have to pay if he ends up divorcing her. That's the thing. If he makes her life miserable, we should make him have to pay for that. We should have to make him have to pay a mana for her ksuba. There's a few different things that Mephoshim talk about over here. For one thing, Tosfos asks the question: if the point is should they take Talabain of Lashia? If the point of ksuba is that it shouldn't be so easy for the husband to divorce her, then why do you have a ksuba for an almana anyway? Why does an almana get it? Why are we saying that normally if she dies, she gets a ksuba? In this case, instead she got her knas. So Tosfos says, basically the idea is, once the Chachamim had to make a takana that a divorce, that when you divorce a woman, she gets a ksuba, then they also had to make a takana, a parallel takana, for an almana, because you want people to want to marry an almana. It's called Mishum Chino. We'll learn about it later in the Masechta. You want people to realize that an almana is somebody worth marrying. Like, it's worth taking on a financial thing for her. Sorry, no, it's not that. Chino means rather that she should have some money, that she should have some money in the bank, the almana, so that later on, if she wants to be married, she'll be able to. So a grusha will have that. We want to have an almana have that as well. Mishum chino, we want to have that she should have something to attract a new husband. Chino means the loshen chen. Also, Bechlal Mepharshim discussed over here the question. Here, the Gemara seems to be saying that ksuba is midrabanan, which is actually a machloikus. We learned briefly before in the first parak, and we'll learn much more later on in the Masechta. That's actually a machloikus. It's machloikus tanoim, and it ends up adayim azeh. It's a machloikus between Ashkenazim and Tzardim, whether ksuba is minatoro or midrabanan. A number of different answers. One of them being that there's a difference between a ksula and a b'ula. Only a ksula of a b'sula is daraisa. The other kinds may only be d'rabanan. The ksula of a b'ula, which we're talking about over here, for example. Another possibility is that minatora, for example, you have. What is it? I lost my train of thought here. Okay, whatever. There's a number of different answers on this, and there are in fact Mepharshim would say you see from this Gemara that Suba is Dirabanan, that the Halacha is Suba Dirabanan. But there are opinions on both sides of it. One other interesting thing that's brought from Reb Chaim Berlin, the one whom the famous yeshiva is named after, that he was the son of the Nativ. He says, if you notice, there's a nuance in the psukim. There's two psukim that talk about a case where a husband is also to divorce his wife. One is our case over here of Oynes, that he has to marry her and never divorce her. And the other one is a Moitzi Shemra, which we talked briefly about before, and we'll learn all the details in the next parak, where he claims that his wife was Mazana during the Erosin, and proof is brought that he's lying, that his Edom are lying, and that the whole thing is made up. In the case of the Anusa over here that we're talking about, the expression is lo yuchal shalcha kol yamav. In the case of the Moitzi Shemra, it's lo yuchal lishalcha kol yamav with lamed. So he says, why the difference? Based on our Gemara over here, according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying that he may not be allowed to divorce her unilaterally, but he may harass her until she decides that, you know what, I want to get. And what are we saying? According to the Chachamim, in that case, she doesn't get a ksuba. So lo yuchal shalchal kol yamav. He's not allowed to directly go and divorce her, but lishalchal, to do something that leads to divorce, he shouldn't do, but he's allowed to. And she'll wind up not getting a ksuba then. Whereas in the case of a Moitzi Shemra, he's already married to her. He already wrote her out of ksuba. She's going to get that ksuba regardless, whether he divorces her because he wants to or because she wants out. Therefore, lo yuchal lishalchal kol yamav. He's not even able to do anything that could lead to her ending up getting divorced without a ksuba. That's the difference. Ruchaim Berlin. Then the Mishnah continued, onus shoisabat tzitzoi, that we said another difference between an onus and mafata is that the onus has to, we said, drink out of his pot, meaning even if he's ugly or deformed or what have you, he still has to marry her as long as she wants to, tough luck. And we said a mafata no. So the question is, amale rabba mkazik yodarabash, mechdi, gomuz migma gmiri mahadadi. Now when you get down to it, we learn the dynam of onus and mafata from each other. For example, we said previously that we learn in the case of the mafata, it says kesef yishko kamor absolut, so it says kesef, but it doesn't say how much. In the case of the anusa, it says 50, but it doesn't say what kind of coins. So by putting them together, we learn that it means 50 shkolim in both cases. So why don't we learn these things from each other also? Why don't we say by the same token, same way as the pasuk saying the onus has to marry her, maybe the mafata does also. The answer is, no, because the pasuk says he should give her a dowry and make her his wife, meaning loy midaita, meaning that she becomes his wife only midaita, only if it's with his consent. So that's what it is then. So he has to give consent, as opposed to by the onus, it says no such thing. The Tosfos asks by the onus also, it says the word loy v'loy tiyah l'isha. But given that by the onus, the pasuk saying he can never divorce her, then it's more logical to say that he doesn't have a choice to marry her either. Also, the v'loy tiyah l'isha is referring, we said before, that the woman has to be willing to marry him. Then we said, Ketzet Shoisabat Tzitzah Kolo. We said, what does it mean he drinks out of his pot, that even if she's ugly or deformed? But then we said, on the other hand, if she's also to him, as she's Chayve Lavin, Chayve Esther, whatever, or we said if there was a Dvar Erva, if during the marriage there was something unsneistic where she has to divorce her, where he has to divorce her because of that, then he's allowed to because then the pot said, Veloy Tiyel Isha means only if Isha are real, like only if she's suitable to be married to him. I set over this teaching to Rav Zvid Min Hajda, and I asked, why? You have the Esse over here, Veloitzi Elisha. You have the Loisese, for example, let's say she's a Mamzeret, Loyove Mamze Bekal Hashem. Why doesn't the Esse override the Loisese? Why don't we say he should marry her anyway? Amali, and Rav Zvid told me, you know what kind of case we say where an Esse overrides the Loisese? Grin Mila Betzorah. For example, when we've learned the case before, and you're in Shabbos and in other places, about a case, a person has taras on his orla, usually there's a loisa said not to cut off taras, yishama b'nega taras, there's an essa of milo though, so then you override the loisa said and you do the essa. The loy efshal, because you're molested, because without violating the loisa said, you can't do the essa. But over here, not necessarily. He omers the loy b'ina. If she were to say, I don't want to marry him, me yisla essa kval, then there wouldn't be an essa at all. So what does that mean? Rashi says, therefore, it means, tell her, in that case, I don't want to marry him. Let Basin tell her, you know what, the fact is, la'alacha, you're also to marry this guy. Just declare you don't want to marry him, even if really in your heart you do. And then fine, then there's no essa, and then automatically he can keep the loy essa.
But if she wants to and she just doesn't,
So first of all, Tosfos discusses this a bit. Other Rishonim also discuss, actually other Rishonim have a different explanation what this means. Means it's a very weak kind of essence that depends on another person. The fact that this essence depends on the consent of another person makes it a very weak essence. You can't, that kind of essay cannot override a lois essay. According to Rashi, what would it mean? It would be the same kind of thing as the famous Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, that if a husband is required of the halacha to divorce his wife, and he doesn't want to, then Beis Din forces him until Achi Yomer Roitzani. He says that in his heart he doesn't want to, and his heart he does want to, because he has a Yetz Tov, and his Yetz Tov wants him to do the right thing, and it's only his Yetz Hara is covering it, the very, very famous Rambam that I've quoted it dozens of times in Sichas. Same idea over here, according to Rashi. The idea would be, yes, maybe in deep, she does want to marry him, but because it's also Api Alaka, we'll get her to say she doesn't want to, and that will represent what she really wants. But this idea that Rishonim mentioned, that what we're saying is it's a weak kind of essay, and therefore, because it depends on somebody else's consent, therefore it's not Doicha Elois essay. The Rashba discusses a similar idea, that a weak essay like that, something that depends on somebody else's consent, you don't make a bracha on either. He explains. He has a whole trove over there explaining. When you get down to it, there's a lot of mitzvahs that say we don't make a bracha on. We don't make a mitzvahs that say on giving tzedakah, on kibud av ve'eim, on many other things. Why?
That's weak.
But it's weak in the sense that it requires somebody else's consent. If the other person doesn't want the tzedakah, then you don't have a mitzvah say. So it's similar to over here. There's only a mitzvah that say to marry her if she agrees.
In other words, if you give money to someone and that person rejects the money, you didn't do the mitzvah. Is that what?
No, but if they say I don't want to take it in the first place, then you can't. Okay. Yeah, we're not talking about they took it and then they say, you know what, I've changed my mind. That's different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about if they said l'chatchila, I don't want to give.
And you're not giving the mitzvah
tzedakah. How? Okay, you have to give the mitzvah tzedakah to actually give it. Tosfos Yeshanim over here mentions a third possibility that what we mean over here is e omer v'lo breina. There's no real mitzvah that say on her. In this whole thing, the mitzvah saseh is on him. The loytiel isha, he's the one who has to marry her. Well, if she's, but she doesn't have any such mitzvah. See, when it comes to, for example, mamzeres, he has a mitzvah loytiel saseh not to marry her. She also has a mitzvah loytiel saseh not to marry him. By her, there's no esser to counteract that. So therefore, Tosfos Yeshanim says, therefore, you can't say that they should have to get married. So then you'd be making her be doing a loytiel saseh without a corresponding esser. Tosfos also discusses over here, by the way, that the example the Gemara gives you, Mila B'Tzaras, is not really such a good example. The truth is, Mila B'Tzaras, there's actually an essay and a lois essay involved. There's a lois essay to not cut off Tzaras, and there's an essay to be careful with Tzaras, Yishama B'Nega Tzaras. Why is it that Mila overrides that, even though usually an essay doesn't override a lois essay of essay? Because Mila is special. Nichusu Ala Yud Gimel Bris. There's 13 times that it says Bris on it. So Tosfos says, really,
it's supposed to be put off.
What?
It's supposed to be put off.
No, because the proper mitzvah is to do it by Yom HaShemini on the eighth day.
But the person sick, you can't do it.
But Saras is not that kind of sickness. Saras is not that kind of sickness. Tosfos says that really a better example would be the example we learned in Yevamos, where you're allowed to collide in tzitzis. If you have a garment made out of linen, and you need to put tzitzis on it, back in the days when they had tchelet necessarily has to be wool, because tchelet means wool dyed blue, not linen. In those days, the Rechal couldn't really dye linen. So therefore, we don't say that it's considered you have a choice because you don't have to wear this garment. That's not considered a choice. You have this garment, you want to wear it. Therefore, the only way to do it is kalayim b'tzitzis. So that would be a better example, Tosfos says. Mashenkin, by the way, nowadays, if we don't have tchelet, then this is not, this is, then it's not like that. In fact, midrabanan, you're b'chal not allowed to, minatoda, theoretically, yes, you could still put woolen tzitzis on a linen garment, we learned in Yevamos. Midrabanan, though, you shouldn't, because what happens if you wear it at night? Then you're wearing kalayim without having the mitzvah of tzitzis. So, in practice, nowadays, if a person has a linen garment, they should put linen tzitzis on it. It says, Yisoma shenis aris of an iskarsha, a Yisoma, an orphan girl who was nisaris, she became an arusa, but iskarsha, and then she was divorced before actually getting married. Rabbi Loza Omer, ha onus chayev a mafata potter. So Rabbi Loza says that an onus would still be chayev to make the payment, a mafata would be potter.
Same person.
So the Gemara is going to actually explain that Yisoma and shenis aris and iskarsha are two different cases. The point is, Rabbi Lazar is saying, Rashi explains, the vote is, Right, so the Gemara is going to explain it actually means two different cases, the Yisoma or Shinisaris or Miniskausha. The point is, either of those cases, there's no father in the picture, so therefore the Knaf belongs to her. So, if she's a Mefuta, if it was Pitri, she agreed to it, therefore she can be Meichel on it. On the other hand, by an onus, then not. Actually, Mefoshim discussed quite a bit over here whether we mean, are we actually talking about the Knaf over here, or are we talking about the other things, the Boishets and the Pagam, etc.?
Mother doesn't come to play this.
No. The father is the one who would have the right to...
If there's no father,
then it goes to her, yeah. So Omar Rabba, Baba Chana, Omar Yechanan, Rabba Lazar, B'shittas Rabba Kiva, Rabba Yomar. Rabba Lazar, in our Mishnah, is going according to the same shitta as Rabba Kiva, who was his Rebbe, who we learned to back on Taflam and Ches, we learned the day that I was away. The Mishnah had mentioned that a similar case, a Naira who was Nis'aris of Nis'karsha, we had a Machloikas over there, whether the Knaf goes to her. We had in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva said that the Knaf goes to her. Rabbi Yosef Agrivi had said there's no Knaf at all. And we had in the Gemara, and we had a Bryce over there, that a different version of Rabbi Akiva, who said that it still goes to her father. So Rabbi Lazar, in our Mishnah, who says that by Mefata there'd be no Knaf because she's Meichel on it, must be according to the Shitta of Rabbi Akiva from that Mishnah. Mimai, how do we see that? Da'amar, because Rabbi Akiva said, Yesh la knas, or knas la asma. He says that there is a knas, but it goes to her, not like Rabbi Yosef Agrivi, that there's no knas, and not like Rabbi Akiva and the Braisa, that the knas still goes to her father. Mimai, how do we see that? Mitkotoni, Yisoma, Rabbi Lazar, Amar, her onus, Chayev, Amafata, Pater. Because what does our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah talks about an orphan girl. That there's a difference between onus and Mafata. And the question is, Yisoma, Pshita. Wouldn't it be obvious by Yisoma? There's no father. There's no father to collect the knas. Obviously, then the knas goes to her. Even Rabbi Yosef really, well, Rabbi Yosef really might not agree. But between the two different versions of Rabbi Akiva, there we were arguing the father's still alive. Here the father's dead. Obviously, there's no father to get it. Ela ha'kamash malon the naira shenisayitzav niskarsha ki yisayma. What is Rabbi Lazar telling us then in the Mishnah? That a girl who was nisayitzav and then divorced is like a yisayma. Even though her father is alive, she's considered in that sense like a yisayma. My Yisoma la'atma, just like a Yisoma, an actual Yisoma, would get the knas herself, and therefore if it was Pituri, then we say she was Mochel on it. Af Nairosh, and Nisaris, and Nisgarish la'atma, the same thing, if she was Nisaris and then divorced, it would also go to her. Amar of Zera, Amar Rav of Arshila, Amar of Amnuna Sava, Amar of Adaba Abba, Amar Rav. Halacha k'Rabba Lazar. The halacha is in fact like Rabba Lazar. And Kori Rav Aleid Rabba Lazar, when Rav heard this, Rav himself had said this, Halacha Rabba Lazar. Rav also nicknamed that he said about Rabba Lazar, Tuvino de Chakimi. He's the happiest, Ma'usher Sheba Chachamim, Rashi says, he's the happiest, the most fortunate of the Chachamim, that the Halacha is like him in this. Now, why is Rav praising him so much? One idea is, again, I just mentioned that there's machloikas among the Mefarshim, whether Rabbi Lazar is talking about the Knas or whether he's talking about the Boishes of Gam, or both. So if we say that he's including the Boishes of Gam, it means he's taking the opinion of Rabbi Akiva from the Mishnah the other day, from Lamed Ches, and going and extending it. The same logic that Rabbi Akiva used there to say that the Knas goes to her, he's using the same logic to say that all the rest, the Boishes and the Gam and everything, also go to her. So why is he Tuvina de Chakimi? So the Mahari Asod says on this, he explains that first verse, that he's taking Rabbi Akiva's thing and extending it. He says a verse like this. We know the pasuk says at the end of Parshas Vezeta Bracha, like come Novi Oy Bistro Kamosha. There was never again a Novi like Moshe Rabbeinu. But you know, Moshe Rabbeinu wore a lot of hats. Besides being a Navi, he was also a Chacham and many other things. So what about there was no other Navi like Moshe, at least Yisrael, Rashi says, whether among the Goyim there was, Bilam or whatever. What about a Chacham? Was there ever a Chacham of the caliber of Moshe? And the answer is yes. As the Medrash says, Rabbi Akiva. If we're saying over here that Rabbi Lazar was able to take Rabbi Akiva's logic and extend it even further, it means in a way that makes him greater than Rabbi Akiva. So that makes him the most fortunate of the Chachamim. He's like on an even a higher level than Rabbi Akiva, who is equal to Moshe Rabbeinu in that sense. And then from Ari Asad, one of the great Talmudim of the Chassam Sefer. We'll have it later in the Masechta and in Samach when we have the story of the 24,000 Talmudim, but during Pesach. But what about it? Shnah, but he went to the Dorim, he went to the south, where it's Israel.
Oh, the Rashi brings it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because as Rashi points out, that this Rabbi Elazar that we're talking about over here is the Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, the Tana Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. He was one of the five, after, we know the famous thing, Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, they all died ben Pesach Latzeres. Afterwards he went Ladorim, he went to the south of Eretz Yisrael, and he taught five new Talmidim, and the Torah was reestablished through them in that dirt. So one of these five is Rabbi Elazar. So therefore we see that Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Akiva's Talmid.
Because he said something in the name of his Rebbe, it makes him smarter than...
It's not just that he said in the name of his Rebbe. We're saying that he's able to take his Rebbe's logic and extend it and show how it applies to even more things than his Rebbe thought. His Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, had said it applies to Knas, but he would have argued that the Boshes and Pagam still go to the father. In this case, where there's no father involved, then Rabbi Elazar is using the same logic to say, well, then by the same token, then it all goes to her, and since it was Mefuta, then she was Meichel on all of it.
Why did Rabbi Akiva didn't include everything?
Because there he wasn't talking about it. There he was talking about the case where the father is alive, just that she's already in Arusa and then divorced.
That's first student.
Yeah. Mishnah says, Ezehu Boshes, how do we define Boshes? Hakolafim Avayash Ramas Bayash. It depends on the person who caused the embarrassment and the person who the embarrassment was caused to. Meaning, Rashi says, that actually... So Rashi takes the view that if this onus or mafata was an average person, then actually the boshes is even worse than if he was a lowlife or if he was a really important person. And Marshall explains the logic is if he's a lowlife, then people say, you know what, he's a lowlife. You know, I mean, she had nothing to do with it. He's that kind of person. If he's an important person, okay, it's also less embarrassment to her. You know, first, she was with somebody who was an important person. There's less bullshit. If it's an average person, on the one hand, you know, people are gonna think less of her. Like, you know, he's an average person. He's not one of these rock stars or something. What are you getting all starry eyed for him for? And Mitzad Hasheni, you know, he's not one of these low down thugs off the street that, you know, yeah. On the other hand, other Mephoshim say differently, and in fact, the Rishami seems to say that basically it's a scale, that if it was a low-down person, then the Boshes is more, if an average person, then less, and if it's a high-class person, then even less, yes. And Hamas Bayesh, it also goes according to the person who had the Boshes. Again, a girl from a very important family is going to have a greater amount of Bosha than a girl from a low-class family. That's Boshes. Pagam. How do we figure out Pagam? We look at her as if she was a maidservant being sold in the marketplace. How much was she worth as a basula? For kamahi yofa, how much is she worth now as a basula? And the Gemara is going to explain why would a person care whether it's shivcha as a basula or a basula? We'll get to that. No, we're assuming that she's not yet. Yeah. And if she's pregnant, she's worth more actually because. Knas shavu b'chol adam. The knas, on the other hand, is the same for everybody. It's 50 shekelim, the Torah says. And in general, b'chol sheyeshle kitz from an atzeres shavu b'chol adam. In general, when the Torah says a fixed amount, here, for example, another example the Gemara is going to bring is the case of the pasuk says if a person's ox gores somebody else's eved knani or shifu knanis, then you pay a knas of 30 shloim. Again, those are all fixed shavu b'chol adam. It's the same for everybody. So the Gemara says, why? Who says that on top of the chamishim shkalim, that on top of that you have boshes and gam and so forth? Maybe the Torah means that 50 shloim includes everything. Amar Rav Zeira, you can't. Yomru, people are going to say, I mean, it's not logical. People are going to say, ba'al bas malachim chamishim, ba'al bas adyotis chamishim. So what, a person who had relations with a daughter, with a princess, the daughter of a king, he pays 50, and if it's bas adyotis, it's also 50. It's not logical. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, so what's the problem? We see the Torah does the same thing in another example. Ihochi gabe eved nami. Same thing by an eved. That was good. Yomu eved noikov magolius shloshim. What's the logic? People are going to say that a slave who pierces pearls, which is a very precise, very skilled kind of job, the famous expression in Hayom Yom, that if you're capable of being noikov magolius, piercing pearl, and instead you go and bake bread. Yeah, baking bread is a very important thing, but after lachet yachashav eishavu, still you're not living up to your potential. So Evan Noker Magolius Shloshim. So what if he's able to make holes in pearls, which is a very skilled job? Then he gets 30. Evan Osa Maisa Mahat Shloshim. And if all this Evan knows how to do is to sew, which is very unskilled labor, is also 30. Yeah, but that's what the Torah says. The Torah says 30 because the pastor says that was the average price of a slave in those days. Actually, they have. They found an archaeological dig. They found tablets and whatnot from those days that imply that the average price of an eved at the time the Torah was given was 30 shekels.
What do you mean the average price? What do you think? Is the earth a
exist. But why if it's 30? Why not 50? Why not 20? And actually, they say an interesting thing. What about we find that Yosef's brother sold him for 20? Some of the Poshim over there talk about the possibilities, maybe because he looked pale and whatever, or they wanted to get rid of him as fast. One second. So Mepharshim assume that the price was fixed all the time, 30 shekelim. So therefore, so why did they let him go for 20? Either because they were in a hurry to get rid of him, or he looked pale after that time in the pit with the snakes and scorpions, etc. But they also found in these digs, they found that actually at the time of Yosef, a few hundred years earlier, yes, the average price of a slave was 20 shekelim. By the time the Torah was given, the price had gone up. So everything is consistent. The story of Yosef is 20 because that was the going price then, and then in the laws of the Torah is 30 because that was the going price then. Ella Amar Abdeir, that's a no.
The Torah is not chronological.
Torah is going according to, yeah. Ella Amar Abdeir, so no. Abdeir says here's a different way to look at it. Ilu Baal Shnayim. Imagine he had two people. You have to say that the 50 shkalim that the onus or mafata pays is not all. There has to be something more than that. Because Ilu Baal Shnayim. Imagine you have two people had relations with a girl. Echad Kadarka va Echad Shaloi Kadarka. One normally, one unnaturally. Which, what we mean exactly, different Mepharshim talk about. Are we talking about the same girl, first Shaloi Kadarka and then Kadarka? Or are we talking because after Kadarka, then she's not a Basula anymore, then these dinim don't apply. Or maybe they do. Maybe there's still Boshis involved, at least. Or are we talking about two different girls, one who had already had relations, Shaloi Kadarka, and now somebody is having relations with her Kadarka, and another one who has never had relations at all? Whatever. What are people going to say? What's the logic that you're going to say that if she's shlema, she's never had this kind of boshes, then you're going to pay 50, and if she's guma, if already there's been a certain lessening of her status, then it's also 50. Amalei Abayis. Abayis says same objection. You can make nami. Same thing by an eved. Yom eved bari shloshim, eved mukashkin shloshim. So what's the logic? You'd say that an eved who's healthy is worth 30, and an eved who's sick and is covered with boils is also 30. Again, those are the facts. So why do we have two different objections? First, we're talking about what the eved does for a living, whether he pierces pearls or sows, and now we're talking about so that the shittim mukbetzis explains because before we were talking about the girl's social status. Is she a bas malachim or bas adyotis? Now we're talking about a physical thing, whether Kadarka or Shaloi Kadarka has been done already. So therefore, it's appropriate to object back with something that has to do with the physical condition of the body. Anyway, Ella Amar Abayis. So no, Abayis says, how do we know, Taka, that the 50 is not enough, that you have the Boshes of Pagam as well? Because Omar Krof Tachas HaShahina, the Pasuk says, you have to pay because he afflicted her. Which implies Hani Takasashina, he has to pay the 50 because he afflicted her. Miklal the Ikaboshus of Gam, which implies on top of that there's more, that there's Boshus and there's Gam. Rava.
Because
Takasashina literally means because he had relations with her. We find the expression Ino used in other contexts in connection with relations. By Yishkavita by Yanea by Shem, Alta Imta Anes Benoitsai that Lovam says to Yaakov. So we see that tachas hasha'ina implies, in other words, why is he paying 50? The 50 is one part of the payment. On top of that, there has to be the fact that now she's worthless on the slave market, the fact that there was embarrassment, the fact in the case of onus that there's tsar. They're not part of that. In other words, we count them separately, exactly.
So the inui is the cause really of...
No, so the inui is the very fact that he had relations with her.
Oh.
That's called inui. The Gemara, we learned, for example, in Yoma that's how we know that Tashmish Amita is also on Yom Kippur, because the Pasuk says the Vinisim is Nafshe Seisim. Anything that's called Inui in the Torah is off limits on Yom Kippur.
Okay, so yeah. Where do we know that there's all the other things?
That's the thing. We're saying that he has to pay 50 Tachas HaShe'ina, implying that there's more payments on top of that. Because besides Tachas HaShe'ina, you have to consider what else was accomplished over here.
That there is something else.
Yeah. Rava Amar, differently, Amar Krov, Nasan Isha Sheikhirim Alavi, Anara Chamishim Kasif. The Pasuk says that the person who had relations with her has to pay the girl's father 50 silver coins, which implies, why does the Pasuk have to add Hashoichirim? Obviously, he's the one. Hanoat Shriva Nun, it means he pays 50 for the Hano of having had relations. Mikral, the Ika Boshes of Gam, again, implying that on top of that there's Boshes and Gam. Okay, the question is, so say, how do you know then that these things go to her father? Maybe the 50 goes to her father. Fine, that it says, v'nasan la v'yanera. How do we know the boshes and gam and sire goes to her father also? Amakra, because the Pasuk says, b'nurea besavia. The Pasuk says, in her youth, in her nairus, in her father's house. From which we learn, kol shvach n'urea la'via. We learn from that any gain that happens during her nairus goes to her father. So we're going to address that in a second. But yeah, the question is, what about this that we find that Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, minayin shemaisa baslovia? How do we know that whatever a girl produces, she works, for example, that goes to her father, which we'll talk about later in the Masechta, shenema, because the pasuk says, v'chiyimka ishes bite la'oma, it says if a man sells his daughter as a maidservant, an oma area. So, ma oma maisia de la rabba, just like a maidservant, anything she makes belongs to her master, ach bas maisia de la via, similarly with a girl, while she's a naira, anything that she makes goes to her father. Lomali, what do you need an extra pasuk? Typically, mi b'nira be sabia. You have b'nira be sabia, kol shvachna ure la via. Ella, so no, you have to answer. Like you just said, that pasuk is talking about a specific context that while she's a naira, her father still has the right to cancel her nadarim.
But we only see that because of these two suki.
In other words, therefore, we have one pasuk that tells us that he's able to cancel her nadarim, but we need a different pasuk to teach us about dine mamonos. Because you might say that you should learn from b'nerei b'savir that it applies across the board. Can't. You can't learn something of money from something of Isurim. In the case of Isurim, in the case of Nadarim, the Torah gave the father the right to cancel her Nadarim. It doesn't mean that in the case of other things, Mamon, that he should have any right over that. Okay, so you might say then, in that case, let's learn it from the Knas. We see over here that the Knas, the 50 Shkolim, goes to her father. So let's learn from that by the same token that anything else goes to him. Again, why do we need the Pasuk, V'chiyim Kirish? Can't. Mamonim Knasa lo yopinan. You can't learn Mamon from Knas. So we're back to the question then. Knas is a special thing. We've had several times over the last few days that knas is a chiddush. Well, then, and therefore, it's obvious. A knas has many different rules. A knas, for example, as we're going to learn tomorrow, does not apply if you admit to it in Beis Din. It only if there's edim to it. A knas can only be handled by Beis Din Shel Smuchin, unlike regular payments. It can be handled by any Beis Din. A lot of differences. You can't say that you can learn regular mamon. The fact that she's spinning or weaving or what have you, as girls used to do in those days, that should go to her father just because the knas of 50 goes to her father. So we're back to the question then. So when it comes to Maisei Abbas, we have a third pause. We have three psukim, in other words, so far. We have B'nerei Abbasavia, which teaches us that he can cancel her nadarim. We have the pasuk over here, V'nos Lavia Naira Chamishim Kosek, that knas goes to her father. We have the Chiyim Perishes Bita La'Alma. We see from that Maisi Adair, that the things she makes belong to her father. But how do we see any other payments that go to her? The Boshes and Pagam and whatnot is not Maisi Adair. It's not Knas. Actually, Boshes maybe is Knas, but Pagam certainly is not. And it's not, and it has nothing to do with Nadarim. The answer is no. Ela Mistabra Davia Havi. No, rather it's logical. It's not based on a pasuk, but it's logical to say that the Boshes and Pagam also go to her father. Iboi, because if he wanted, he could have made her have the same kind of Boshes and Pagam. He could have given her to a manuvel, to a low class or dirty or whatever person, or mukashchin, again, somebody who has boils, or somebody who's disfigured, and marry her off to him. He has the right to do that, we said before. And that would involve a lot of boshes, and it would involve a lot of pagam. So since he has the ability, the right in halacha, to be able to cause her to suffer boshes and pagam, therefore it's logical that if the boshes and pagam was done by a third party, the money goes to him. But there's boshes, the fact that she's embarrassed that now she's married to this bum, or this mukashchin, or whatever. And by the way, Rashi mentions an interesting thing. Boy Masala, Rashi uses the expression Lakad Shabbia, that he gives her to this person that he should do kiddushin beat with Bia. Why doesn't Rashi say Kesef and Shtar? So one idea is because Kesef and Shtar, she wouldn't necessarily suffer that Boshes and Pagam. The guy will be Makadisher. She could then say, you know what, I'm a Meredes, I don't want to have relations with him. We'll talk later in the Masechta about the dinim of Meredes. There's various consequences, but still you can't force her to have relations with her husband. Mashenkin, if it was kiddush and Mabia, then yeah, by definition, there's going to be relations there. The father is giving her over for kiddush and Mabia. The father is handing her over. The father has the right to do that. We're saying so. Therefore, she doesn't have the ability to. Same way as the kiddush kesef or shtar, she doesn't have the ability to prevent the actual kiddush from happening.
Yeah,
I mean,
not considered that.
We're saying the father has the right, as long as she's an Ira. That wouldn't be considered Ines.
Later on.
Ines is only if her father was not Makadosh. If it was her mother or her brothers who were Makadosh, or we mentioned maybe if she was Makadosh herself, then because the Kedushin only exists midrabanan, therefore there's Mir. No, if her father was Makadosh, the marriage exists there at Isis, she'd need a get. Maybe, or whatever, yeah.
But it's still not considered Ines.
No, it wouldn't be considered Ines. Ines is outside of marriage, yeah. Then we said, Pagam Royno Sakili Shifchanim Keres. We said that the Pagam is you figure out as if she was a slave woman being sold in the market. Question is, Hechi Shaminim. How exactly do you figure that out? The average person doesn't care whether a Shifcha that he's buying is a psula or a gola. As Rashi says, the only reason you're buying a shifcha is to have is for her to give birth to more slaves, or the malacha kaima, actually Rashi says, that for work. Other Mepharshim say that also you want her to have children who grow up to be slaves or whatever. The point is you don't care whether she's a psula or a gola. Now, Amar Avu Shmuel, what it is like this: Omdin kama adam roi to litin ben shifcha psula the shifcha beola the shamshay. You figure out how much does a person want to pay the difference between a shifcha or who's basula or ba'ula to serve him. And again, the question is, my nafkalamine? Again, what's the difference? Here's where Rashi says, the master doesn't care, elashi yulan vlada. Rashi says all he cares is to have children, is that she should have children who will be new slaves for him. What does he care about, whether about basula or ba'ula? Ella no, ben shifcha ba'ula, shifcha shayin ba'ula, la sila avdai. It's not that he cares about it as far as for whether she's serving him. It's he wants to buy a b'sula for his slave, to marry her off to his slave. So the question is, avdai my nafka lemina? Again, why would he care? And the answer is, be'evet sheyesh le rabbi kodas ruachim. Suppose we're talking about, he has a slave who he likes him a lot. The slave does very good work. So the master wants to do him a very nice thing. So he figures, I'll do him a nice thing. I want to give him the experience of marrying a b'sula and having relations with her for the first time. So therefore, so that would make a difference in the price. And Tosfos points out, I mean, so what? And this woman is a princess, like we talk about on Amud Aleph. You're gonna shot her up the same as a slave woman. How is that logical? And the answer, so Tosfos says the answer is that what you do is actually you figure like this. Part of the equation that we're figuring out over here is her status. A person would be willing to pay more for a girl who's not only from a high ranking family, but also a basula, to marry off who is Evich Yeshakura through Achemenu. He wants like the Evich to have like the ultimate experience. He'd pay more for that than he would if the girl is a basula, but from a lower family. So therefore, it all factors in.
Shifka from a higher family?
Would be worth more, because like this. Yeah, you know.
And if she's a high family, she's not
a shifcha.
No. But then there'll be a difference in price, yeah.
You're especially more poor, they have no choice. It's so poor, it wasn't
a fair, Mishnah says, Kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas. As a general rule, anytime the father is, we learned this before, anytime where the father is able to sell his daughter as an omar ivriya, meaning when she's a ktana, ein knas, then there's no knas, because that only applies when she's a naira. She has knas ein mecher. And wherever there's a knas, when she's a naira, then there's no mecher. You can't sell her anymore. And the Mishnah explains, ktana yesh la mecher ve'en la knas. So ktana can be sold, but there's no knas. Naira yesh la knas ve'en la mecher. Whereas a naira is the other way around. There is a knas for an onus or mafata, but there's no mecher. The father can't sell her. A boigris ein la loy mecher ve'en la knas. If she's a begera, 6 months after nairus, then there's neither mecher nor knas. The father can't sell her anymore, and there's no knas, because the Torah says not knas dafka by naira. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rivud Amar Rav, Zu Divir a Meir." This Mishnah is according to a Meir. Abba Chachamim Bayim Yesh LaKnas V'Makam Mecher. But the Chachamim say you can have. There is an overlap where there can be Knas as well as Mecher. The Tanya, Ktanim Ibaf Yom Echad Bach Tavi Shtei Cyrus, a little girl from a day old from when she's born until Shtei Cyrus. Yesh LaMecher V'Ein LaKnas. She can be sold, but there's no Knas. Mishtavi Shtei Cyrus Hacha Tivgar Yesh LaKnas V'Ein LaMecher. From two hairs until Begeres, then there is Knas, but there's no Mecher. The father can't sell her anymore. Divir a Meir. That's our Mishnah. Shahayir Rav Meir, Omer, Kol Makom Sheyesh Mecher Ein Knas, V'Kol Makom Sheyesh Knas Ein Mecher. That was Rav Meir's general rule. V'Chachamim, Omer, no. Ktanim about Gimel Shonim Yem Echad, V'Ad Shetivgar Yesh La Knas. From 3 years old until Begeret, there is a Knas. What do you mean? Knas Ein Mecher Loi? What are you implying? There was a Knas in those years, but there's no Mecher? everybody agrees the father can't sell her after she's once she's a naira. So if you're saying that until Begeris is a knas, from three until Begeris is a knas, when is he allowed to sell her? No, what the Chacham are saying is that from three until naira, you can have both. He's able to sell her as an amar evria, and there's knas for onus or mafate. Amar chis, to my time as a mayor, what's her
name?
Actually, bugger is yesh l'knas. Yesh l'knas. Aknas. But everybody agrees that there's no mecher. Everybody agrees there's no mecher after naira. They're saying that between three and achativgar, there is a period over there from three until naira when you have both.
For me, it's mecher also.
Yeah, but no. And actually, I mean, below three, there's also mecher. The reason the Chum are mentioning from three is because below three, there's no knas. Yeah, my time is a mayor. So, okay, what's the mayor's reason? Where does he get the idea that knas is only for a naira? Because Amakra, the pasuk says, "V'loy tia leisha, b'mahav asma akasa b'daber." Tia implies that she is able to be makna herself. She's able to marry herself off. A ktana can't do that. Only a naira can do that. Which actually is not so simple. We're going to have in the next perek actually a machlokas about that point. We said before that a father is able to marry off his daughter as a ktana or as a naira. Do we say that as a naira she's allowed to marry herself off? Or at the time of Nairus, is it only her father still has the rishus to? It's machlokas in the next perek between Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish. This that we're saying over here that we're not because of tia. No, we're going to talk about it. We'll talk about it then, not necessarily based on pesukim. It could, or maybe because of Kol Shvach Na'urim Lavi. I don't know. I haven't done that Gemara yet. We'll get to it in a few days, Be'ez Hashem. But the point is, there is such a machlokas. There is an opinion that when she's a naira, she still does not have the right to be mekabel kedushin on her own. If she's mekabel kedushin and her father doesn't want, then there's no marriage, according to the Yechonon. According to the Shlokish, yes. When we're saying over here, v'loy tia le'isha v'mahava atma akasa medaber, that can only be according to the Shlokish. V'rabbanan, what would the Rabbanan answer? Amar Shlokish, Amakra Naira. No, but the pasuk says Naira, which Hagoy Tabach points out that this is, as in most places in the Torah, the word Naira here in the pasuk is spelled without the hay at the end. So without the hay, we can understand that if we look Tana Mashma, that it means even a Ktana. Without the hay means Ktana. Because then it means like not even a full Naira yet. It's missing it. So the Gemara says, "Shomer a papa bearded of Chanan from Beit Kluchis, and a papa the son of Rav Chanan from Beit Kluchis heard this explanation. Also, Omer Kameder of Shimi Ba'ashi, and he went and told it over to Rav Shimi Ba'ashi. Omer Leis, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi told him, after an Ahol Masnisula, so you, where you come from, you learned this explanation about the significance of the word Naira being spelt without the hay. You learned that it's relevant to this din that we're talking about in our mission over here, whether it's Knas or Ktana." Hanan, whereas we in our yeshiva, ahomas nininah, we learn it in connection with a different din. That Amar Shlokish, hamotzi shemra alaktana potter. If the husband is motzi shemra on his wife when she's a ktana, and it turns out that it was false, then he's potter from the penalties that he gets. Then normally he would get, if she was a naira, he'd get malkus and then have to pay a knaf 100 kesef. Wait. But if he does it for a ketana, then it's potter. Why? Shenema v'nosnu lavia na'ara, and they are na'ara mole dibra kosev. That pasuk where it says that he gives the hundred shkolim to the father of the girl, there it says naira with a full hay. And that's actually the only place in the Torah where it does. Every other place in the Torah where it uses the word naira, it's missing the hay.
Why is that?
So we're going to say now. No, that's the point, in other words. So we learn from that, in other words, that in the case of Moitzi Shemra, Dafka, it has to be a Naira. Because there the pasuk spells out the word Naira with a hay.
And we imply everything else.
1 second. That's Maskisura Bada Bahava, Taimur, the Kosar Rahmana Naira. So what are you implying? Because the pasuk spells out the word Naira, therefore it means a Naira. Halav Hachi Hava Amina Filistana. So you would think that otherwise Moitzi Shemra could apply even if the wife is a Tana? Can't. The pasuk says that if it turns out that it's true, she has no b'sulim, meaning she was mizana during the erusin. Then they bring her out to the door of her father's house and give her skila. If she's a ktana, then she's not subject to Mrs. Basin yet. So obviously it can only mean a naira. No, Ella kan naira. So no, why does it say over here naira with a hay? Not to tell us that it can't be kana, that's obvious. Ella ha kol mokum shenemer naara. Without the hay, I feel it's kind of a mashma. It's to teach us that you should know every other place in the Torah where it uses the word naara without a hay, it means that she can even be kana. In this one place, the Torah spells it with a full hay to teach us that all the other, otherwise you would think all the other places, okay, that's just the Torah's way of spelling the word naira. Now that you have one place where the Torah spells it with a hay, and logically it has to mean a naira because it's kind of the whole thing wouldn't work, then now we understand from that that Rosh Lakish is saying, according to the Chachamim, that the word naira without a hay implies a kana. It's also spelled without a hay there, and in fact, the many midrashim say that Dino was 7 or 8 years old at the time. Yeah, they bring the Chizkuni brings on this pasuk. Why taka does the pasuk spell out the word naira in this case by the Moti Shemra? Not besides to teach us this din that we're saying over here. He says the idea is because there you're talking about that what happened. He accused her of being unfaithful. It turns out it was a lie. It turns out she was completely faithful to him, and in fact we end up punishing him for doing that. She's now not a rowing fool. She's like even more strongly his wife now that there was an objection raised and it was quashed and shown that she was faithful after all. Now she's like even more perfect than she was before. And he brings from a Gemara and he brings from a Gemara in Pesachim, also Yisi Be'enov Kamoi. After there was a fight and it was made up and it turns out that she was completely in the right, then she's even fuller, even better off than she was before, kind of. And she may not, that's a different question. She may not want to stay with him, but at least she's on a higher level. And Beruchni is also, you know, that we can. Yeah, I mean, Adam came, that's true, yeah. But, yeah. That's also true, right? No, well, yeah, although, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Anyway, I mean, so we have. I guess we could say the same kind of thing. Also, you know, we've had. There's been. With our relationship with the Edishter, there's been quite a bit of Moti Shemra against us over the years that we're not sticking to the terms of it. But also Yisi Ba'in of Kamoitis Shalom, it turns out in the end that we are faithful to the Edishter and we have that Shlemus. We have that extra hay.
Obligated to claim
Moti Shemra,
or is
he have a choice? The Pashtas, he still has a choice. I mean, the Edim can come on their own, not necessarily. We're talking about the husband brings them to
Beit. No, the Edim comes to the husband and say X, Y, Z about your wife.
So the husband tells him, you know what, if you have such Edis, go ahead to Beit. I don't want to be involved, but if you claim it, then fine, go. That wouldn't be Moti Shemra. Moti Shemra, he says, Loima Plasi the Bitchab Sulim. He makes the claim. Okay, we'll learn about it more in the next paragraph. We'll I don't know about that necessarily. That's actually a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch in general. When a husband has reason to suspect his wife's faithfulness, does he have an obligation to divorce her, or maybe can he say that he doesn't believe the evidence? That's a whole different discussion.
Yeah. When you ask the Edom to come,
I changed the law, and didn't finish off.
Okay,
yeah, nice.
Hashem changed the law from what?